Chapter 5 Harris is about as useless as Tom would have predicted him to be. He tries to deny everything, then says all he remembers is that it was a blonde lady. After some prodding and threatening, Tom gets him to cough up a picture of the necklace she was wearing. But it's nothing that would stand up in court. He can't arrest Kate because 6 years ago, someone vaguely matching her description talked about arson in a bar. Of course, he could arrest her on Derek's testimony, but Derek is either unwilling or unable to do that, and Tom hasn't wanted to push him. He's fragile, hurting, and if Tom pushes, he's just going to take off again. Besides, even with Derek's statement, it would be shaky. Kate had no motive, and Tom doesn't think he can talk about werewolves in court. There has to be a better way to do it. And none of it solves his current problem, which is a man who was murdered in a video store of all places. Fish and Game is very insistent that cougars don't rent videos. Tom tells them not to worry about it. The camera footage from outside gets a wonderful picture of the alpha werewolf transforming back into a person, but it's too grainy to identify the person in question. One thing he finds interesting about this is that between this and the incident with Kate, the alpha clearly doesn't care about getting caught on camera, or even changing forms on camera. That kind of reckless disregard isn't like the Peter Hale that Tom had known. But then again, very little of this is. As things stand, Peter is really the only suspect he has. Kate might have decided to tie up loose ends, but she wasn't in town when Laura was killed, and she definitely isn't an alpha werewolf. If the Alpha is going after people involved in the fire, Tom simply can't imagine who else it would be. There's always the possibility that Derek and the Alpha are working together. Derek has been helping Tom fight the Alpha off, that's true, but Tom doesn't even know why the Alpha is calling him out. Maybe he's doing it just so Derek can help him and gain his trust. Derek's presence is unaccounted for during the first and third murder, and during Garrett Myers, he was sleeping on Tom's sofa. He could have slipped in and out. That made sense, but Tom can't shake the idea that Derek would never work with his sister's killer. He's genuinely grieving over her death. Tom can smell his grief, something that makes him deeply uncomfortable. Anything's possible, and he supposes Derek might put it aside if it meant taking down the people who had killed his family, but it seems unlikely. Given all of that, Tom heads back down to the hospital and finds Melissa. "Hey, I was wondering if you could do me a favor." "Sure, what's up?" Melissa asks. "Let's just say, hypothetically, that I suspected a hospital employee of doing something they shouldn't be doing," Tom says, and Melissa gives him a look. "And let's say that, hypothetically, I didn't have enough evidence to get a warrant to prove it. In this hypothetical situation, could you get me some personnel files to take a peek at?" Melissa pinches the bridge of her nose. "Hypothetically, it would depend on what sort of information you needed. I'm not giving you home addresses and medical histories unless you have a damn good reason. How about the names of people who worked a certain shift in a certain ward? That I could do for you, hypothetically." "No, actually," Melissa says, smiling. "When and where?" Tom writes down the approximate time frames of the three murders for her and hands it over. "For the long-term care ward." Melissa, who isn't an idiot, looks at the list of times and frowns. "You think one of the staff here is involved in these murders?" "I'd prefer not to say." Melissa gives him the side eye, then says, "Give me a few minutes," and walks over to the computer. She types quickly, writing down a few minutes before coming back. "These are the three people who worked all of those shifts. Good luck." "Thanks, I owe you one." Tom takes the list back to the station and gets to work. Unfortunately, none of the easy answers he had hoped for jumped out at him. None of the hospital employees have any connection to either the Hales or the Argents. Nobody had started working there just before the murders began. If one of them is helping Peter Hale, he doesn't know why. He thinks about interrogating them, but decides to table that for now. He doesn't want to risk tipping Peter off. He's pondering his next move when he comes out of the station and sees a dark SUV parked next to his cruiser. Chris Argent is leaning against the bumper, arms folded over his chest. "Sheriff," he says as Tom approaches, "I was wondering if I could speak to you in private." "Sure." Tom nods towards the cruiser. "Let's go for a drive." Chris looks a little uncomfortable with the idea, but he gets in the passenger seat of the cruiser and waits until Tom has backed out of the parking space and is on the road. "I feel like we got off on the wrong foot," he says, "and I admit that was my fault. You came around asking about my sister, and it put me on the defensive, thinking that you might arrest her. I reacted badly, and I'm sorry. I think it's going to be important that you and I be able to work together." "Well, I appreciate the apology," Tom says, "but I want to make one thing perfectly clear. The reason I didn't arrest Kate wasn't because I felt what she did was justified. It was because the wound was supernatural and couldn't be documented, and the video footage had werewolves on it and couldn't be aired in court. If evidentiary logistics hadn't been a problem, your sister would be in a cell right now. She had no reason to shoot Derek." Chris's mouth thins like he had just bitten down on a lemon. "A werewolf attacked her car. Yes, the one she shot was a different one, but in the same place at the same time. Obviously, they were working together." "Obviously?" Tom says. "Okay, this is a fun thought experiment. You were in the military, yes?" "Yes," Chris says warily. "Did you see combat?" 2 tours during the Gulf War." "Okay, let's say that while you were on patrol, a car nearby was bombed. You see the man who planted the bomb fleeing the scene, so you know who did it. Not far away is another man, same ethnicity, also running away. Do you shoot him? Or do you assume that maybe he's running because a car just exploded?" Chris breathes in and out slowly. "That metaphor isn't anywhere near as accurate as you think it is. Werewolves are predisposed to violence." "See, I just don't think that's true," Tom says. "I think they have different instincts from humans. Maybe they're a little harder to control. But if werewolves were really as dangerous as you make them sound, there's no way that 99% of the population would be in the dark about them." "Sheriff, I respect your position, but I doubt you've dealt with as many monsters as I have." "Oh, you do, do you?" Now it's Tom who has to take a deep breath. 2 months ago, I arrested a man who raped his 4-year-old cousin. Over the summer, there was a guy who brought a gun into a diner and shot 8 people. I think I've dealt with plenty of monsters, Mr. Argent, and let me tell you that none of them had fur and fangs." Chris pinches the bridge of his nose. "I'm not saying that every werewolf is going to inevitably cause harm. Like I said, we have a code. We hunt those who hunt us." "Well, you've got one hell of a flexible interpretation of that," Tom says. "How about the night Laura Hale's body was found, when you shot at 2 men in the forest?" At this, Chris looks startled. "How do you even know about that?" "Derek told me. So how about it? You couldn't have even seen who those 2 werewolves were, let alone be sure that they had committed the sort of crimes that would warrant the death penalty." "They can heal injuries, and they don't usually stick around to chat. You take them down so you can interrogate them, and then if they're innocent, they go free." "So you literally shoot first and ask questions later." Tom shakes his head in disgust and talks over Chris's sputtering. "Why did you break Derek Hale's car window?" Chris takes another deep breath. It was a preemptive move to impress upon him that he wasn't going to be allowed to cause trouble in Beacon Hills. "And you see how, from my perspective, it was absolutely unnecessary, right?" "From the perspective of someone who hasn't spent his entire life hunting werewolves, yes. It would seem unnecessary." "How about from the perspective of someone who actually knew the Hale family? Which, by the way, while we're on the subject of people who didn't deserve the death penalty, I'm interested in your explanation of why they were murdered." Chris frowns slightly. "The Hale House fire was an accident, an electrical fire." Tom pulls the car over and puts it in park. He turns to look at Chris with his jaw slightly ajar. Okay, I've clearly been coming at this conversation all wrong. I was under the impression that you weren't an idiot. Excuse the hell out of me. No, I'm pretty sure there's no excuse for this. Are you seriously going to sit in this car with me, look me in the eye, and tell me that you had no idea that your sister murdered 8 people, 3 of whom were children? We're going to have this conversation? Chris holds his gaze. It was an electrical fire. You're kidding me, right? You've got a house full of werewolves. None of them went through a window. None of them kicked down a door to save not only themselves, but their children? You think faulty wiring put some sort of spell on their house to keep them inside? Do you think the fire spread so quickly that they all got burned to a crisp in their beds before they even smelled the smoke? That would be one hell of a damaged circuit. You know Kate lived here at the time of the fire. You know she likes shooting werewolves who haven't done anything wrong. Do the goddamn math! Chris says nothing. It's hard to tell in the dim streetlight, but he looks paler than before. Tom starts the car and pulls back onto the road. He drives in silence for a long minute, heading back to the station. I don't have quite enough evidence yet, Mr. Argent, but I'm going to find it. When I do, your sister is going to be held accountable for her crimes, and I don't much care about whether or not you have a problem with that. Chris lets out another breath. If you find that evidence, bring it to me. We police our own. No, that's not how this works. I wouldn't trust you to police an ant colony, and I certainly don't trust you to see that your own sister faces justice for killing people you clearly don't see as worth protecting. Tom pulls into the parking lot and jams the gear stick back into park. Now get out of my car. Chris departs without another word. Jesus. Tom pinches the bridge of his nose and heads for home. 2 nights later, 2 men are found dead in the forest, practically ripped apart and set on fire. Both of them have a record, and they've both been suspected of arson in the past. Tom digs deep, trying to find any connection to Kate Argent, but she was careful, and there's nothing. He's beginning to face up to the fact that it's going to be damned hard to pin anything on Kate when someone is murdering all her accomplices faster than he can find them. And that's if there are any left at this point. Tom doesn't think it would have taken more than 3 or 4 people, not including the arson investigator. If he's right, Kate's going to be the next target. What I really need, he says to himself, is the hospital security footage. Well, you know, Stiles says, and Tom practically jumps a foot into the air. I might know a guy who can get that for you. Jesus, Stiles. Tom rubs both hands over his face. No, you are not involved in this investigation. Scoot. Stiles' response to that, predictably, is to plop into the chair next to Tom and ask, why the hospital security footage? You know I'm not going to tell you that, right? Uh-huh. Stiles starts shuffling through his father's papers. Tom smacks his hand with the pen, but it's too late. Hospital staff, too. You think someone at the hospital is involved? Tom moves on to massaging his temples. Stiles, come on. Stiles makes a face at him. Okay, but I'm serious about the hospital footage. There's this guy I know at school who can do computer stuff. He was arrested for it once, but he was a juvenile, and I definitely haven't looked at his sealed record. That's it, Tom decides, getting Stiles by the ear. We're done here. Ow, 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 Dad! Stiles protests as Tom hauls him to his feet. Tom has gotten Stiles into the kitchen and is trying to distract him by making him do the dishes when his phone chimes with a text. He glances down to see a text from Derek that reads, "Can you meet me? Need to talk. I'm at the high school." He frowns a little, wondering what Derek is doing there, but texts back to say that he'll be there in 10 minutes. Then he looks at his son and sighs. "You're just going to follow me if I go out to meet Derek, aren't you?" Stiles looks at the ceiling. "Is there a right answer to that question?" "Try the truth." "Yeah, I totally will. Are you going to handcuff me again?" "No. Get your shoes. Come on." "Yes!" Siles does a fist pump and runs for the hallway. 2 minutes later, they're in the car. What do you think Derek is doing at the high school? He didn't say. Could be it has something to do with that chemistry teacher. Siles chews on his lower lip. He's probably the only accomplice left, right? But he obviously didn't give you enough information to arrest Kate. How are we going to do that if some crazy guy keeps murdering everyone who might be able to incriminate her? Tom sighs, but doesn't bother to protest the inclusive pronoun, because that's not going to get him anywhere. If I knew that, I would have done it already. Okay, fair, but you're clearly onto something, because you're investigating the hospital, and nobody else is, Stiles says. When Tom doesn't reply, he continues, Come on, Dad, tell me what you found. Dad, Dad! For the love of God, Stiles, Tom says, you're already more involved in this than I like. I'm already regretting bringing you with me right now. Shut your trap before I handcuff you to the seat while I go inside and see what Derek wants. Stiles sulks, but does as he's told. 5 minutes later, Tom parks in the school's empty lot and jogs up the steps. The front door is unlocked, and he frowns at it. I feel like I should report this to somebody. Doesn't the school close at 7? Maybe Derek unlocked it from the inside, Stiles says. Did he say where he was? No, just that he was at the high school. I kind of thought he'd be waiting outside. Tom's starting to get a bad feeling about this. His hand is resting on the butt of his gun before he had even thought about it. Stiles, stay behind me. You have Derek's number? Yeah, Stiles says. He seems to realize that his father is serious, and he does as he's told without comment. Want me to call him? Yeah, see where he is. Okay. Stiles pulls his phone out as his father shines a flashlight up and down the empty hallway. Hey, Dare, where are you at? Tom notes the friendly nickname and tries not to give his son the side eye, because there are more important things happening right now than Stiles' crush on a 21-year-old. His werewolf hearing allows him to hear Derek say, I'm in the cafeteria, and he relaxes a little bit, knowing that Derek is actually here and they're not walking into a trap. Okay, be right there, Stiles says, hanging up. He starts ahead of his father, relaxing for the same reason. It's this way. I know where your cafeteria is, Stiles, Tom says, rolling his eyes as Stiles jogs ahead. Despite the fact that Derek is here, Tom can't shake the feeling that something is wrong. His skin is starting to crawl and itch, and he realizes that his claws have come out without his permission. It's getting hard to breathe, to focus. He stops walking and watches Stiles through a haze of red. He has to remind himself that it's his son, not an enemy. The rage, the violence, it's not him. Hey, Derek, Stiles says, waving as Derek emerges from the cafeteria. What's up? Derek takes one look at Tom and stops walking. His eyes gleam blue and he says, slowly and deliberately, Stiles, get behind me. What? Stiles half turns to look at his father. Tom can't imagine what he looks like, but it's enough to knock the breath out of Stiles, his eyes going wide with fear, not just for his father, but of him. Tom, Derek says, still keeping his voice calm, you need to lock it down. Take a deep breath. Shit, Tom snarls, his claws digging into his palms. The pain is grounding, but the rage he's feeling underneath his skin only abates a little. Derek, take Stiles, get him out of here. No way, we're not leaving you alone, Stiles protests. Tom snarls again, but Derek stays calm. It's not a good idea, Tom. If we run, you'll chase. It'll only make matters worse. Stiles, we're going to back away slowly down the hall towards the exit. Do you understand? Yeah, Stiles says, and miraculously does as he's told. His gaze never leaves his father as he's doing it, though, and he seems to have gotten a firmer grasp on the situation, because he says, It's okay, Dad. I know you're not going to hurt me. I'm not afraid of you because I know you would never hurt me, no matter what this piece of shit Alpha wants you to do. I mean, okay. There was that time you spanked me because I ran into traffic, but that's different. Stiles, Derek groans. But it's working. Tom is focusing on that, on his son's ridiculous rambling and the confidence in his voice. He takes another few deep breaths and starts to get it under control, a little bit at a time. The claws go in, and he shifts back to his human form. "Better?" Stiles asks, and Tom nods. He's feeling okay about this. He's got it under control, and they're going to be all right. And right about then is when the Alpha barrels out of one of the classrooms with a howl. Stiles yelps and takes off at a run on complete instinct. Derek tries to stand his ground, but the Alpha slams him into a row of lockers and then takes off after Stiles. Tom doesn't even think about shifting before he's done it and thrown himself onto the Alpha's back. His claws sink into the Alpha's shoulder, and it roars, going to its hind legs and throwing Tom off. Then it takes off down a different hallway. "Shit! Stiles!" Tom scrambles to his feet and grabs Derek by the wrist, dragging him to his feet. He catches up with Stiles just as he ducks into the locker room. Derek slams the door after them. "The fuck!" Stiles manages, his voice high and a little hysterical. "You didn't tell me that thing was the size of frickin' Godzilla!" "It's okay. Take a deep breath. Calm down," Tom says, trying to do the same himself. "It went down the other hallway. It might not..." Before he can finish the sentence, the Alpha's hand slams up against the door's window. All three of them flinch away involuntarily. Derek grabs a bench and shoves it up against the door to keep it from opening, although Tom has a feeling that won't stop it for long. He turns and grabs Stiles by the shoulders, giving him a little shake to ground him. "Is there another way out of here?" "What? Oh, yeah. The door on the other side lets out into the gym." "And from the gym there are doors outside, right?" Tom asks, and Stiles nods. Tom unholsters his gun and holds it level with the flashlight. "Okay, let's go. Stiles behind me. Derek, you're on rear guard." He heads out into the gymnasium. The lights are all out, so it's almost completely dark, and he feels exposed and nervous. He pans the flashlight slowly. One minute there's nothing. The next, the Alpha is between them and the door. He's not moving, but just blocking their way, eyes gleaming red. Tom hears Stiles let out a quiet gasp behind him, and suddenly he's 500% done with all of this. "Enough!" he shouts, using his best cop voice. "Playtime's over. I want you to shift back to your human form and put your hands on your head, or I will open fire." The Alpha growls, low and menacing, and stalks forward. Tom aims down and fires a shot at his feet, and he stops. "Don't test me, you overgrown mutt. Do you think I've been dicking around the last 2 weeks? I figured out how to fill these bullets with wolfsbane, and I will put an entire clip in you if you take one more step towards my son." The red in the Alpha's eyes glows even brighter, and Tom feels that crawling underneath his skin start again. "Listen to me," he says. "We aren't doing this. There's no power on this earth that could force me to hurt my son. Would you have been able to hurt yours? His name was Nathaniel, right? Is there any power on earth that could have forced you to hurt him?" The growling stops. Then the Alpha's body starts to shrink and transform. A minute later, Peter Hale is standing there, completely naked. Burn scar is somehow standing out in the dim light. He studies Tom for a long moment, and then the red in his eyes fades away. "No," he says, "I suppose there isn't." He takes a breath in the silence that follows. "Hello, Tom. It's good to see you."